All right, we'll call a meeting of the Agriculture, Rural Economies, and Veterans Affairs Finance Committee to order. Representative Brown moves the minutes of March 3rd. Any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Minutes are adopted. Today, members and audience, we have from Carryover, and thanks for coming back. We're glad to see you again. Didn't mean to leave you sitting, but we knew you enjoyed the presentation last time, too. We have the Hastings Veterans Home presentation, and then we're going to hear from Minneapolis Group, and then we'll just move back into our budget books and start going through divisions and get as far as we can today. So welcome to the committee. Introduce yourselves and proceed any way you see fit.
Okay. Morning, Representative Gunke and members of the House Agricultural, Rural Economics, and Veterans Affairs Budget Committee. My name is Charles Chickcock. I'm the administrator of the Veterans Home in Hastings. Along with me this morning is Mark Kreiser, who is our business manager for the facility. It's a pleasure to appear in front of this committee. We look forward to telling you some things about the Veterans Home in Hastings and answering any of the questions that you may have.
And before you go on, just a reminder to members, you do have a copy of the PowerPoints in your folder, and the spreadsheet for each one of these is hooked right to the back of it, so we don't have to search. I commend Veterans Affairs for being very well organized. Go ahead.
Thank you. I will first be giving a brief overview of the Hastings Veterans Home. Mark will then come and be reviewing the budget and some of the items that was requested by the committee. If you have any questions or concerns during our presentation, please stop us and we'll be happy to answer those questions. The Minnesota Veterans Home in Hastings is located on 128 acres of wooded property on the east side of the town of Hastings. We're on the site of the old Hastings State Hospital. The State Hospital closed in the mid-70s. Veterans Affairs at that time took over the State Hospital as a domiciliary for Minnesota veterans.
And can you explain to us what domiciliary means? Like, we have new members here, and just it's real basic 101. What's domiciliary?
Well, domiciliary is actually a federal VA term for that level of care. The state of Minnesota recognizes it as board and care. So we're actually licensed as a 200-bed board and care. The VA calls it domiciliary care.
How is one qualified to get domiciliary or care at your facility?
I have that on the very
next
slide.
All right, I'll start talking then.
Mr. Chairman, our goal at the Minnesota Veterans Home in Hastings is to reintegrate residents back into the community. Get them back into independent living. As Representative Junkie asked, what is the criteria to get into the Veterans Home? In Hastings, it is the same criteria as the other four homes. Person must be an honorably discharged veteran, have served 181 consecutive days on active duty, be a Minnesota resident or have service credited to Minnesota, be a spouse of an eligible veteran, and have a medical need. Did that answer your question, Representative?
What kind of medical needs?
Medical needs could be everything from health, issues with COPD, hypertension, cardiac issues, could be mental illness, bipolar, PTSD, could be chemical dependency, whether it be alcohol, drugs, or other substances. So that would be a medical need. A doctor signs off, this person needs board and care and or domiciliary care based on this diagnosis.
And are you going to talk about the future? I should look at the slides before I ask you, but the average stay, the average age, those types of things?
Yes, sir, we will, Mr.
All right,
Chairman.
Thank you.
Very next slide.
I knew that.
Our average age for a resident is quite a bit younger than we find in our other homes. The average age is 57 years old. Although our age ranges are from 28 to 93 years old, of course, the majority of them are male at this time. Majority of our residents are Vietnam veterans, but we've also have had Iraqi war veterans. We do have a few WW2 veterans, and we do have Korean War veterans as well. The top three diagnoses for the residents that live in our facility is mental illness, and we talked about that briefly, chemical dependency, and many of our residents are still struggling with that disease. They're actively battling that dependency. Medical, as we talked before, could be cardiac, could be COPD, diabetes, TBI, any of those type of medical diagnoses. 85% of our residents have a mental health diagnosis, whether it's either primary diagnosis or a secondary diagnosis. You asked about the average stay, it's about 2.5 years in our facility. Although we have some people that come more quickly and some people that live with us for a very long term. Services provided at the Veterans Home in Hastings. I just want to highlight some of the ones that make a difference. We do have vocational rehabilitation services on campus. We have a work therapy program. We have mental health services, drug and alcohol counseling. We do have pharmacy services, chiropractic, hospice. We provide transportation to all medical and dental appointments. We have benefits assistance. And we also have cashier services for our veterans. Those are the ones that I feel make us different than the typical board and care that you'll find in the community. Our occupancy rates, I have those listed for you from 2005 to 2008. Currently, we're at about a 93% occupancy. Some of the other programs that we do provide at the Hastings Veterans Home, is one of them is called a Dom Plus. That is a program designed to keep people in the domiciliary or at the board and care level for as long as possible. We also do a supportive housing program that is in the community. A number of years ago, we bought a 5-bedroom house, remodeled it, and have currently have 4 residents living in that house off campus. We're very happy to talk about our groundbreaking that's planned for our new 60-unit supportive housing program that will be built on the campus of the Veterans Home in Hastings. We're anticipating a groundbreaking in the next couple of months.
Can you, I don't know if you're going to go into more detail, for the members that were here last year, that 60-bed unit was a bonding request that you actually had that we reviewed in this committee, and then it didn't get funded through bonding, but you can you explain how you went about it and how you got that built? And I think the story of alternatives is a good one for this committee to listen to.
We'd be happy to, Mr. Chairman. We went to Minnesota Housing and Finance and worked very closely with them, and we did end up getting a loan from Minnesota Housing and Finance to build this 60-unit apartment building on our campus. We also got some funding from Dakota County as a HOPE grant, and we did get some pre-design money from the legislature as well. But we did end up with about $11.1 million to build this structure. We're very pleased to be partners with the Minnesota Housing and Finance organization.
And when it's done, what kind of residents will be there?
Well, we'll have a variety of residents living there. Many of our people will have chemical dependency issues, will have mental health issues. We will provide the supportive services necessary so they can live independently as possible.
Do they pay rent, or are the state and Veterans Affairs federally picking up most of it?
The majority of the revenue will be from rent. The residents will pay rent, which is different than in our domiciliary. They pay for cost of care. but it will be a rent. They will be able to purchase services from us, whether it be vocational rehabilitation or social services, case management, or even perhaps some help with medication administration.
Okay. Representative Faust has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Would you please explain just the difference in a level of care between the new facility and what you currently are operating? Because, you're 93% full, and that's fine, but that tells me that the quality or the level of care you're providing, it's about the right size. And so I'm assuming that the new facility is a different level of care than what you're currently providing. And if so, please explain.
That's true. Okay.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, the level of care will be more independent in the new structure. What our goal is, quite often what happens is a person comes into an acute care setting to deal with dependencies in alcohol, maybe mental illness, maybe medical. They typically come to a facility as ours and continue getting that support from the VA and from our facility. When it's time for them to, they no longer need the type of care provided by our facility. They need a place to live, and they need supportive services. They need a good, safe, sober place to live. Quite often, that's not available. Our people do have limited incomes, which makes finding market-rate apartments very difficult. So this will be a step towards independent living. Independent living, it is permanent. It's not temporary. A person could live there the rest of their lives. Or they could use it as a stepping stone to go back to the community they came from. Does that answer your question, President? Any other questions on the supportive housing?
Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I noticed that you said the average age of your residence was about 57. And as I recall, one of our homes last week, the average age was 77 or 87. Does your home specialize in Vietnam vets or a younger veteran? Per se,
fact. Mr. Chairman, Representative, the people that live in the domiciliary, the board and care level, typically are younger. They're not nursing care. We're not a nursing care. We are a board and care. So our people tend to be younger. Does that answer the question?
And Mr. Cox, I guess the other question I didn't see up there, which is always a curiosity to me, is geographically, where do most of your residents come from? The Twin Cities, Seven County area, what's your mix of metro versus the rest of the state? I doubt you see a lot of people from Crookston or Thief River Falls, but I'm asking the question.
Mr. Chair, the majority of our referrals come through the VA hospital in St. Cloud and the VA hospital in Minneapolis. I don't have the demographics in front of me, but I can certainly get them to say what counties those people are coming from.
And the reason I ask is obviously our focus in this committee is, again, how can we provide services like this statewide in every county? And I suspect most of them are coming from the metro, and that's fine because that's where you're at and people want to be close to their families or where they grew up. So what do we do with veterans in outstate Minnesota have these types of needs, which are very focused needs in your facility, and where do they end up and where do they go? And I'm just asking a rhetorical question. I don't know if you have the answer or not.
I do not have it with me, Mr.
Right. But it's something we want to continue to focus on as we provide services beyond the Twin Cities. Representative Szymanski.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question would all deal in the same line of thought here. In terms of the age of the veterans that you're serving and so forth, are many of these possibly previously homeless people that, with due to mental illness and chemical dependency, were living on the street, and they've been through the veteran services, been brought in for treatment and care?
Mr. Pack.
Mr. Chair, Representative, yes, the short answer to that is yes. Many of our people who come are homeless or are in the process of becoming homeless. You know, mom is throwing the son or the person out of her basement or her spare bedroom, or the parents are moving south and some of those types of things. That's an extreme case, but that does happen. So the short answer is yes. Does that answer your question?
Yes, it does. Thank you.
Representative Brown.
I was noticing, and it seems to be true of many of the the homes that, in this case, 85% of the residents have mental health diagnosis of some sort, or, and then the next one was the chemical dependency. I wonder, are we doing anything different in the state today as opposed to 10 or 20 years ago with research we know about how to deal with these issues to better serve our veterans?
Mr. Kyes. Mr. Chair, Representative. We continue to partner up with the VA hospitals, and they have many good programs where they're looking at better ways to care for the issues that our veterans are facing. So we do work cooperatively, very cooperatively with the VA hospitals, and our people see a lot of the practitioners at the VA hospital. So I think they get the best care available for their mental illness or chemical dependency issues.
And Representative Brown brings up a good point, and just as a little preview, we will be talking about mental health issues. Probably when we get to, we might have to forward a bonding request, and basically we've had a mental health facility out in my area that's been planned for a number of years to specialize in some of those mental health problems that we see. Because it's a growing concern. It's a growing concern nationally with our returning vets from Iraq and Afghanistan. Plus, we know we have, and your population is indicative, we have an entire flush of Vietnam veterans that are kind of coming up to retirement age and maybe have had latent problems that really have never been addressed. And for many, many years, we're going to be addressing a lot of those folks as they age, and some of these things even show themselves more than what they have in the past. So we are concerned, and this committee's concerned, and we're trying to address it. We're kind of wrestling with the Senate on it right now, but as usual. But we're working with Representative Berglund and others on it to see what we can do, and we will have that discussion. You hit it right on the head. Mr. Cox.
Okay, we will move on to the next slide if there's no more questions regarding the Board of Housing. I have a slide up here that talks about the number of buildings on the campus. We have 15 buildings currently on the campus. Two are residential, one's an administrative service building. We do have a central powerhouse, and we have other support buildings. And I put this slide up here as a note that we do have approximately 203,000 square feet of buildings and floor space that we maintain at that campus. Some of our asset preservation projects that are in progress right now, we did drill a new well. We do have a stormwater sewer repair waterproofing of building 23 that is currently taking place. We have a dish room remodel that we're using $300,000 of asset preservation money to complete. Total amount of asset preservation that we spent to date is $2.43 million. We do have a number of additional asset preservation. There's some new projects on the slide. We have some roof replacements that we have to get done. We have some facility ground upgrades, curbs, and parking lots and roadways. We need to update our chiller system, which is our air conditioning system. We need the one building that's not sprinkled currently is our powerhouse, which we want to get a sprinkler system in. We got some sanitary sewer work, and the list goes on. Our estimate for need for asset preservation for new projects is about $1.22 million. Repair and betterment projects that are in progress or have been completed for fiscal year 08-09 are there. We have some site improvements, electrical work, equipment and fixtures, and under site improvements, we have, again, the roads, the gutters. We had some necessary tree trimming because we do have a very wooded campus, so we do need to keep up with that. Upgrades to parking lots and then lighting for the campus. We've worked on our fire alarm system, our digital controls for the heating and air conditioning. We had to redevelop one of our wells, and we've had to do some work on our facility generators. Repair and betterment new projects. Pretty straightforward. They're right there listed. We need to put in a UPS cooling system. We do have backup batteries for our critical computers, telephone, public address system, nurse call system, interruptible power system. We need to do some work on that. We got some plaster repair, upgrade the telephone system, and some other issues. Total need for repair and betterment for new products or new project is about $930,000. And that concludes my portion of the presentation. And I'd like to turn it over to Mark Kreiser, the business manager for the Veterans Home.
Welcome, Mr. Kreiser. Introduce yourself for the tape and proceed.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Mark Kreiser. I'm the business manager at the Veterans Home in Hastings. And the slide in front of you is our revenue sources, $4.2 million from the general fund. $1.5 million comes from our residents from private pay. And $2.1 million comes from the VA in per diem for the days of care. And we have some leases, utility reimbursements from MnDOT, who leases its utility services through our powerhouse. Our operating budget for fiscal 2009 is $8.1 million. That breaks down to $6 million in payroll and $2.1 million in non-payroll expenses. The payroll budget of $6 million breaks down to full-time salaries of $4.8 million, part-time salaries of $1.1 million, overtime pay of $23,000, premium pay of $16,000, and other benefits of $88,000. Fixed payroll costs of our salaries, the full-time and the part-time salary dollars are 73% of that is the actual pay to the staff, 6% goes to the FICA tax contributions, 18% goes to insurance payments, and 3% goes to retirement. The utilized FTE at the Hastings Home is 93.18. And a full-time equivalent is 80 hours of compensation during a two-week payroll cycle. One or more individuals can comprise a one FTE complement. For instance, two individuals can be part-time, compensated at 40 hours each for a total of 80 hours in the pay period. That would be one FTE. The FTEs break down into 44.9 for direct care and indirect care of 48.28. Breakdown of the FTEs in direct care, we have HSTs, which are human services technicians, of 5.1, RNs of 6.9, LPNs of 13.3, medical administration, 3.10, social services, 5, rec therapy of 5, psychology of 3, vocational rehab, 2.3, the chaplain of 0.2, and a volunteer service coordinator of 1 for the total of 44.9 direct care. And the indirect care staff breakdown is 6.26 for administration, finance management of 6, human resources of 1, the dietary is 11.51, housekeeping is 12.3, maintenance is 6, and transportation is 5.21 for the total of 48.28 indirect care. Other payroll benefits of $88,000 that we talked about earlier consist of workers' compensation costs, separation expenses for severance pay, vacation payoff, unemployment compensation, or FMLA insurance payments. The non-payroll budget for fiscal 2009 is $2.1 million, and that comprises of the big one, I'll just go with the big ones, utilities of 26.65%. Supplies of 45.93, security services 5.81, repairs and maintenance 5.63. The the non-operating budget supply detail. It's a total of $965,000. Of that $965,000, $368,000 is for pharmaceuticals and related services. Food and food-related supplies, $336,000. Nursing direct care supplies is $29,000. Maintenance supplies, $101,000. Administrative supplies, $24,000. Housekeeping supplies, $36,000. Heating and fuel of $40,000, and transportation fuel of $31,000.
Representative Doherty has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Are you able to take advantage of the same pharmaceutical pricing that the VA system uses in general?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, our pharmaceuticals come from our Minneapolis home, and Minneapolis home does buy off the federal supply schedule, so yes.
Thank you.
Representative Powell.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think I know the answer to this, and I think we've actually already covered it, but I wanted just to make sure. Your cost on a per-bed basis is less than half as much as the other veterans homes that we've seen, and the reason being is that you're just a much lower level of care, and I'm just wondering, do you have any beds that are a higher level of care, or are they all pretty much with what would be considered a relatively low level of care?
Mr. Chair, Representative, all of our levels of care are all at the board and care. We have no other bed higher or lower than board and care.
Okay. Mr. Kreiser.
I'll turn it back over to Mr. Cox.
Mr. Cox.
Mr. Chair, the last slide that we have is the change item that has been recommended by the governor for this year for the Hastings Veterans Home. And what we're looking at is the hiring of a psychiatric nurse practitioner, hiring a licensed psychiatrist, and getting some education for our existing staff to help us work more efficiently with the mentally ill clientele.
A change item's on page 9, members of the book. So, Mr. Cox, expand it by how many? What do you have up there now? Obviously, mental health and CD is your biggest diagnosis out there. How many MI staff do you have out there now? And what are you adding to the complement?
Mr. Chair, we currently have 3 psychologists on staff. We want to hire a psychiatrist who can prescribe medication and can deal with the more complex mentally ill clientele.
Representative Chemansky.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Is there a need for a full-time psychiatrist at this time? Is this what we're talking about, one FTE for a psychiatrist?
Mr. Cox.
Mr. Chair, Representative, we feel there is a need for a full-time psychiatrist on site. So that is what we have requested. I do not see the mental health needs reducing anytime soon. In fact, I think we're going to have an increase in the care for the mentally ill. Thank you.
Representative Doherty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What are you doing now for psychiatric care and prescription drug prescriptions? Do you work with Minneapolis Home for that, or to provide those services for residents that need that?
Mr. Cox.
Mr. Chair, Representative, we work very closely with the VA hospital. A lot of our people see the psychiatrist at the VA hospital, and with the increase of clients that the VA hospital is currently seeing with our soldiers returning from Iraq, there's a shortage of psychiatric care. I don't want to say a shortage, but we could better serve our veterans at the facility. They would get more attention than putting them in with the general people coming back from Iraq. I didn't say that very well, but basically, there's a lot of needs at the VA hospital for psychiatric care. We think we can supplement
the care while having a psychiatrist on staff at the veterans home.
Mr. Chair, follow up. Do you then transport your residents to another place right now, or do you bring in a specialist?
Scott. Mr. Chair, Representative, we don't have a psychiatrist right now. Mm-hmm. We have psychologists. So we have to rely on the VA. So we transport to the VA hospital.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Cox, just to that point, I suspect you are, and there is a big crunch right now at the VA hospital, there's no question, with psychiatric care, and they probably are understaffed based on what they're seeing come in the door now. Are you finding your waiting period? Typically, if you have someone who sees a psychiatrist at the VA in Minneapolis, what's the time frame to get that patient in?
Mr. Chair, it can be a very long time. And there's sometimes very urgent needs, and then they usually go to urgent care and get triaged through that process. Okay. So it is a long process.
Again, I'm trying to help make your case here, because as Representative Brown said, there is a growing need for psychiatric care, and what we're finding, and we're seeing it in St. Cloud too, and I mean, there is just, if you have a specific problem you're trying to get in to get treated, it might be a very long wait before you see a psychiatrist, and so we're, through Minnesota's own system, we're trying to address some of that now, and we know it'll be there in the future too. You're exactly right. I'm looking at the spreadsheet, Mr. Kreiser, on the back page. You said $220,000 is needed in each year on the governor's change item, but I see a change item on the spreadsheet of $386,000. That number doesn't match. On the bottom, full-time workers, change item 386. What's the discrepancy there?
Mr. Chairman, that $386,000 is an additional change item that was presented. I don't have all the details right now. I'd have to get that and get back to you, though.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, the $220,000 comes out of that, and then the additional is the $180,000 for maintaining our current service level, which is change request that has been presented also.
All right. We'll keep an eye on that and make sure the numbers are matching up. Second question I have, the spreadsheet looks pretty good. Can you just explain to me on the second page of the spreadsheet, just for my edification, I see the repair and maintenance, and I've got that. And by the way, Ms. Keel, if you can get me in the next day all your repair and betterment like we talked about and bonding, I need to see that list, a very detailed list. And members, they've requested cash for repair and betterment. That might be a valid request, but our bonding committee wants to take a look at it, make sure none of that is bondable, that it be more long-term and we could get it out of our budget and perhaps into a bonding budget. We need a very detailed list of your million, two, or three, or whatever it was, of total repair and betterment requests. If you can get that as soon as possible to our office, that'd be helpful. And then as I go down there, Mr. Kreiser, I see a 423 agency direct cost that disappears then in the next biennium. What is that?
Mr. Chairman, that's an accounting transaction due to the change of department. The Veterans Homes were under the Veterans Homes Board last year, and as a change to Department of Veterans Affairs this year, that's a transaction within the accounting.
Well, that's absorbed into the administrative budget in VA, I suppose, then. Or it's not broken out, but it's
just a recording. It's trying to match up the two different departments through the fiscal year.
All right. Any other questions for the Hastings home? Seeing none. Thank you. Good presentation. We'll get Minneapolis down here.
Mr. Chairman, thank you very much.
Okay. There's two handouts coming, members. There's the again, the overheads, which, albeit small, if you want them emailed to you for any reason, we can have it. The spreadsheet is hooked on back, and tucked inside of it is another single sheet. So
you want to make sure you pull that out, and they'll be explaining what it all is here as they move forward. Welcome to the committee. Whenever you're ready, introduce yourself for our tape and proceed.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee.
And by the way, thanks for coming back too. You know, we know you didn't drive as far as Fergus Falls or Silver Bay, but you did drive and take your time, and we didn't get you on last time, but you know, we never know in this committee how long things will take.
Mr. Chairman, thank you, and we're flexible.
Okay, good.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Judy Kirky Coleman. I'm the administrator at the Minneapolis Veterans Home and would like to give you an overview of the home. And I have with me our business manager, Ed Anderson. He will be presenting the budget and finance information. As most of you know, the Minneapolis Veterans Home was established in 1887 as an old soldier's home located on 53 acres overlooking the Mississippi River and Minnehaha Falls. We have 341 licensed skilled nursing beds, which includes 91 beds of special care unit or dementia care, and 61 licensed domiciliary beds. We have an active waiting list.
I think your idea of the slide's moving because I'm reading that, but I'm not seeing it. There we go.
Sorry about that. We have an active waiting list.
You almost became the Department of Agriculture, where they put up one slide for like 45 minutes at a time, and so we're trying to make sure. They're not sitting here right now, I hope, so I can give them a little brief.
Mr. Chairman, we just want to make sure you're watching.
All right, very good.
We have 7 on the waiting list for the domiciliary, and then 252 on the waiting list for skilled care. Residents, 88% are male, 89% are veterans, male and female. 38% are World War II veterans, 18% are Korean veterans, 17% are Vietnam veterans, 16% are other peacetime and Gulf War veterans, 11% are non-veteran spouses. The average age for skilled nursing is 73 and 59 for board and care. 33% were admitted directly from their home or apartment. 67% were admitted from other nursing homes or other veterans homes facilities. We serve veterans and spouses of veterans. 99% is our current occupancy rate. The common diagnoses are dementia, chronic health conditions such as chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, diabetes, high blood pressure, hypertension, and then also mental health diagnoses.
Representative Magnus has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For your waiting list, is that On a historical basis, is that kind of maintaining those numbers or increasing or decreasing, or you're about 250 now? And I know you're not, haven't been there that long, but
I was going to say, Mr. Chair and Representative, I've only been here 4.5 months, so I believe Ed can answer that for us.
Mr. Chair and Representative, those numbers have been staying pretty consistent over the 2 years that I've been there.
Okay. And do you also know, just to follow up with Representative Magnus, where most of them come from? A 7-county metro area at this home, I assume? I mean, it's located here, and the waiting lists are generally from this area?
Mr. Chair, pretty much consistently from the metropolitan area.
Just to
Representative Magnus.
Again, and follow up on the waiting list, there's another question in my mind about those. Are those folks that are generally the age group of the World War II veterans or Koreans? Are you seeing the age decline in there?
Mr. Chair, Representative, we've seen a pretty substantial decline in the World War II veterans over the last year, and more significant increase in the Korean and Vietnam era veterans.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
We, at Minneapolis, we worked on our strategic plan, and we finished our process in January, and I wanted to share some of the things that we accomplished in that strategic plan. We looked at our mission, vision, and values, and actually our mission statement didn't change. It's serving those who have served. Our vision is to have a person-centered community of excellence that meets and exceeds the needs of those we serve in an environment of peace and well-being. And then our values are we care. It's a willingness to serve in an environment of person-centered care with compassion, accountability, respect and dignity with excellence as our standard. And then in that strategic plan, I just wanted to highlight the five major goals that we do have for Minneapolis Veterans Home. Number one is Minneapolis Veterans Home will meet and exceed customer expectations by providing quality services as a community of excellence. Number two is the Minneapolis Veterans Home will provide effective and efficient services according to resident needs to ensure fiscal integrity. Number three, the Minneapolis Veterans Home will establish customer service standards of excellence to sustain and expand positive customer relations. Number four is the Minneapolis Veterans Home, as the employer of choice, will recruit, hire, and retain the highest quality of workforce. And then there's a fifth that was at the end of the slide there, and it's, we will maximize the utilization of technology to enhance the residents' quality of life and services. Any questions?
We're doing good.
Mr. Chair, again, for the record, my name is Ed Anderson. I'm the business manager for Minneapolis Veterans Home, and I'll walk you through the financial budget overview. The current population... Our current population that is being served, 291 skilled nursing beds to include special care units, and 50 domiciliary room and board beds, for a total of 341 skilled and domiciliary. And just kind of a quick overview of why the beds were reduced from the, one of the previous pages. In November 2006, the Veterans Home Board placed a moratorium on admissions until the DVA and health department surveys could be resolved. In July of 2007, the bed capacity was reduced by 50 skilled beds, nursing beds, and remaining residents were transferred to other vacant beds within the facility. Then in November of 2007, as a result of closing Building 9 due to structural problems, 50 of the domiciliary residents were transferred to Building 17 on the fourth floor. So that's kind of where we're at from a census standpoint at this point in time in history. Our budget activities for the Minneapolis Veterans Home are divided between direct care and indirect care areas. Other budget activities include designated contributions and the resident trust fund that we maintain on behalf of the residents. Our current budgeted FTE is 506 FTEs, and there will be a breakdown on some slides here in the future. Our revenue sources include the general fund base for 2008-2009 of $44.1 million, or 59.4% of our total base budget. The total 2008-2009 federal per diem reimbursements equal $15.3 million, or 20.6% of our total budget. And then I also noted reimbursement rates by the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs are $74.42 per resident day for skilled nursing care and $34.40 per resident day for domiciliary care. And I thought that just might be a point of interest as far as how much or what kind of rate. And that's why it's critical for us to maintain a very high census in order to take advantage of those reimbursement rates.
Give me those two rates again.
$74.42 per resident day for skilled nursing and $34.40 per resident day for domiciliary care.
Thank you.
And then in addition, our 2008-2009 resident private pay equals $14.8 million, or 20% of our total budget. For a total biennial budget of $74.2 million. Other sources of revenue include designated contributions and trust donations of $493,000, and our resident trust fund for the biennial is $1.2 million. And again, those are funds held in trust for the residents' use, personal items. Additional source of revenue is a lease that we maintain with Prodigal House Incorporated. This has been a lease that's been ongoing since 1997.
Is that lease adjusted periodically, or has that been a steady lease, and what is your annual income on that lease?
Mr. Chair, that lease is adjusted annually. It's used to, it's the leases for Building 16 and the money, the revenues generated from that is used to offset utility and building maintenance, and it also subsidizes our operating budget by $100,000 a year. The fiscal 9 projected revenue is $269,000. 2008 was $263,000, and it's adjusted annually for utility cost increases. We find ourselves faced with a few revenue challenges. Again, it's critical that the home stay at full capacity and serve maximum VA per diems and resident pay fees that are collected. Collecting outstanding debts and reduce our accounts receivable balance. Other sources of donations for designated contributions to support resident activities. And identifying other sources of revenue opportunities.
Can you talk a little bit about your accounts receivable? I guess that's something I didn't ask the other homes about, but I'll ask you, what percent is out there as receivables, and what's the average time to get those in, and how many never come in? Do you have some more information on that?
As a percentage, I would say probably less than half a percent, approximately half a percent for the most part. Over the course of the last 2 years, we've implemented a more aggressive approach in our accounts receivable collections. We've engaged the Department of Revenue and their MCE, Minnesota Collection Enterprise, in collecting some of those outstanding debts. We've also taken a more aggressive approach in probate collections. As a resident passes, we try to go to the state to collect anything that may have been outstanding or past due.
Representative Fowler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My question is, I've been, as we've listened to the other veterans' homes give their presentations, I've run the numbers as far as on a per-bed basis, what it costs on a per-bed basis. And I understand you have some domiciliary beds which are different, and so I subtracted out of your total budget approximately double the cost for each of those beds as what Hastings has. And I still came up with a number that is more than double on a per-bed basis compared to the other veterans' homes. Can you give me an idea why it's that much higher?
Mr. Anderson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Faust, I guess the numbers that I've looked at more individually are more a cost per care day, resident care day, and it's... The skilled nursing care is approximately 50% higher than the domiciliary care. Now, given that there's more staff that's required in the skilled nursing area, it's more there's more medications, there's more one-on-one type of attention that's required. Consequently, those costs do inflate. We have a much smaller domiciliary staffing level than we do the skilled nursing.
Is that possible?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I understand that the domiciliary is going to be much lower cost, but I'm trying to compare apples to apples here as much as I can, and so I'm not counting the Hastings facility. I'm counting the other ones that, as far as I know, are relatively similar to the care that you've got. 291 beds that are high level care, which I believe the other facilities are at that same level, and so I'm comparing where you're at to where they're at, and that's the number I'm coming up with. And so I understand the domiciliary, but comparing this facility to Fergus Falls and Silver Bay, why is it that much higher?
And again, maybe you can, I'm surmising, but I want you to answer that, because we've asked the department, by the way, and then hopefully in the next week or so, to come up with all those costs that the committee members have been requesting. Basically, what does it cost to be at a veteran's home facility in Fergus or Minneapolis versus a contracted home in Bemidji or somewhere else that would contract with the vets? What's the difference in per-day costs for skilled and domiciliary? We're trying to get the department to help us out with that. But also, with Minneapolis, I suspect that, number one, it's an old facility, and it's not set up as efficiently as, say, a Fergus or a Laverne would be with nursing stations and other things and monitoring a patient. So you've probably got more staff needed there, I'm guessing. And then I'm also curious, You have a lot of empty space there at times. You have empty buildings there at times. You have large grounds to take care of. Is all that factored in to these costs per day? Because obviously you have it's an old historic facility that you're trying to take care of there too. And is that reflective in some of these chargebacks too on the patients?
Mr. Chair, with regard to vacant buildings, those costs wouldn't be associated with cost of care calculation.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I would like to spend some time looking at it myself. I haven't really done that comparison, but I would be happy to give you an analysis on that and get you that information as soon as possible.
If you could work with the Christine Keel and the others in the department, Mr. Gill, Acevedo, because they are trying to get those costs squared away for us, too. It's been a question that's been recurring, and I think it's important that we have a handle on that. We shouldn't just be blindly appropriating money. We should understand why and the differences and those other things. And then, Mr. Anderson, I'd ask you then, as we follow up, the grounds, the empty buildings, the other things that are out there, how do we pay for those? I mean, we still have to somewhat maintain them, and keep them in even a boarded condition, take some costs. Where are those reflected, and how are those paid for? Is that just state appropriate dollars or federal appropriate dollars or both? Or,
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, that would come out of our overall operating budget. The buildings are maintained, as you say, in a very minimal state, very low heat, very little electricity being used. But those costs would be reflected in the overall operating budget with a mix of general fund and federal reimbursement rate.
And I guess it would be, as you're looking at your other stuff, to break down those non-associated costs that are not associated with the skilled nursing or domiciliary, what are those additional costs? And as part of the budget, just if you could break those out so that we can get a good handle on those too. All right, proceed.
So then, as the last bullet point on that slide is trying to identify other opportunities of revenue sources that would support the activity. On the expenditure side of the budget, our current compensation and benefit costs are approximately 83.3% of the total budget, or $31.9 million annually. This represents a 3.7% or $3.1 million increase from fiscal year 8. High overtime costs continue to challenge the home. However, we currently see a downward trend and could potentially see a decrease of $500,000 by fiscal year end. Currently, the senior management of the home is preparing a root cause analysis of the overtime costs. The analysis has not been completed and will be implemented in several phases. The focus of the analysis includes scheduling trends for holidays worked by employees, monthly budget variances, streamlining the hiring process to reduce vacancy lags, decrease the reliance upon external or nursing pool staff, and review vacation liabilities and other staffing levels, and then maintain consistency among other homes. And I'd like to call your attention to one of the handouts that had the graph of overtime costs. And this wasn't included in the original presentation, but I thought it was significant enough to bring to your attention. If you take a look at the year-over-year beginning fiscal year 2003 compared to fiscal year 2009, you can see a substantial decrease in our overtime expenditures. In comparison, you'll also see a significant decrease in our use of agency or nursing pool costs. Now, as we decrease our nursing pool costs, our agency costs continue to stay high. And a point of that is that we've got staff that are on board, and we have management control of that staff as opposed to the nursing agency pool staff members that are coming in. More consistent care that's being provided to our residents. And so as we continue to work on curtailing our overtime costs, we're also curtailing our outside expenditures for nursing pool costs.
And Mr. Anderson and Ms. Kirky, we're glad you're here. We're glad you're working on it. Obviously, my sense is we need to
Everyone in this place seems to take a deep breath and allow you to work through some of these things after the audit report and other things, and we're certainly going to let you do that. I guess my question is, how difficult is it for you, or how are you scheduling into the next biennium your costs? Are we going to be real certain? I mean, you've seen 1 year dip now in overtime. Are we going to see that continue to go down? Are you counting on it leveling? How are you putting that into your future budgeting for the next 2 years? I mean, we're having a hard time seeing what our budgets are going to do in 2 years, and how are you looking in and seeing this?
Mr. Chair, when we approached the biennial budget on that issue, our primary goal was to fill the positions that we currently have vacant and full-time and part-time positions, greatly reducing our overtime costs and our agency costs. So that was an intentional budget position that we took as we prepared the biennial budget.
And I know the nurses and others out there, that's the goal, I think, for them, too. These extended shifts and double shifts and things don't play well for patient care either. So, and how's the recruiting going on support nurses and support staff out there in this? Are we finding, I guess the recession has even hit somewhat the medical field, although not as severely as other sectors. Are you finding there are people applying for those jobs when you have openings now, or are you getting a pool to interview from? How does that look out there?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, in our last few hirings, we have had great success in recruiting nursing assistants or HSTs. Actually have some LPNs that we've recruited and RNs, and there seems to be an increase in the availability of people out there, which helps our efforts and in providing the care level that we want to.
Okay. Representative Faust.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I actually want to correct the statement that I just made. The numbers that you've got here as far as your total budget were for 2 years, and the other numbers that I had looked at for the other nursing homes were for 1 year. So instead of being double, it's about 20% higher, not double. So I wanted to correct that, and I apologize to you for that.
My mistake. You apologize. On the table. Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I was just wondering, in regard to the direct care people on your staff, is there a high turnover rate among the direct care staff? And if so, what the reasons might be for that, if that's the case?
Mr. Chair and Representative, the last figures I saw for HSTs or nursing assistants, our turnover rate was 23%, and our goal in our strategic plan is 20. So the turnover statistics continue to get better, and I think that has to do with having the appropriate staffing and morale, staff morale, and so.
Okay, thank you. And I don't know if anyone else could address this as far as what the average is as far as turnover among the other homes, the other veterans' homes, or among homes in general. I don't know if you have that information.
Mr. Chair, Representative, from my life in the private sector, that's about average for long-term care industry. That is, that's the 20% would be the goal for most in the private sector.
Okay, thank you.
Do you, and I guess I didn't ask the other homes this either, but one of the big problems we have in this state with our nursing and our nursing assistance programs is finding sites for their hands-on training once they come out of classes. Do you cooperate with any of our MNSCU campuses here in the metro area to bring in people and get them trained and hopefully them wanting to work in long-term care and maybe even at your place as openings come? I know that's been a very good conduit in a lot of our communities across the state. What do you do there?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, currently we do not have any type of a cooperative agreement with MNSCU at all. It has been an area that we've looked at to recruit to and towards, specifically in the springtime when classes are beginning to graduate and people are looking for jobs.
That's something I think we'll explore a little bit with you. I know that as we've toured with bonding committees, but also other, that's one of the big things we hear is really we have a need for these folks, but we're at capacity as far as their hands-on training. And
Mr. Chair,
yeah.
Members of the committee, part of the issue with having training sites is survey issues or having quality of care provided. We feel that we're at that level now, so that is part of our goal is to have those cooperative efforts. In the past, with some of the survey issues, it wouldn't have been appropriate to have the training at on-site,
right.
But we feel that we're ready for that now.
Yeah, and I think that'll be good in the future, so we'll look forward to working with you on that and see if we can't get some cooperative agreements going to get some students over there as they're doing their practicums out in the field. All right.
Mr. Chair, the next slide details out our FTE breakdown. Unless you want me to, I can go through that line by line.
I really don't want you to go through it line by line. I forgot to stop the other homes when they did it, but once they got on a roll, I just kind of let them go. But, you know, you can, you know, some of the highlights, obviously, are your staff, your total, age, you know, whatever. Just give us a broad brush.
Probably the primary, most significant FTE there is RN, use of RN seniors and RN supervisors. That's something that the other homes don't use very well, or not very well, but don't use very much. And other than that, that's probably the only most significant change in the other FTEs.
And I guess that the only question I'd ask is your IT person, you have one FTE on staff, it looks like. Do you need anything beyond that? Do you contract with the state or the department for any other IT beyond that?
Mr. Chair, we do have access to other IT members that are part of the Veterans Affairs Department.
And do you get billed back for that?
Mr. Chair, we do not.
Okay.
The next slide details our non-salary type expenditures. These account for 16.7% of our total operating budget, or $6.4 million. This represents a 0.3% or $220,000 decrease from fiscal year 08. The most significant decrease is reducing the number of professional and technical contracts. And again, some of that was due to the reductions in the nursing pool contracts that we were using as well. Categories that did increase from the previous fiscal year, space, rental, maintenance, and utilities. And my understanding is that there's an attachment to the back of your handout that has an object code detail breakout that's more descriptive. Our space rental, maintenance, and utilities account for 17.2% of our budget, includes all the utility costs for water, sewer, fuel oil, electricity, and security services. Our professional technical services category is 9.9% of the budget, includes medical services for psychiatric care, dental, eye care, nursing agencies, chaplaincy, staff development, and employment screening. The most significant part of our budget is the supply category, 45.8% of the budget. Includes food at 33%, drugs at 28%, medical supplies at 22%, and general office and other supplies at 17%. Employee development, we created an investment and a commitment to improve our employee skills and knowledge. This category is 1.8% of our budget. But some of the difficulties we've had in recruiting and also retention, we found this is a very important place to make an investment as a facility that we train our own, we grow our own, and through that retain our own. Other operating costs are 10.6% of the budget, includes laundry, waste removal, pest control, and general maintenance services. And then the next slide just shows on a pie chart basis what those expenditures are. With regard to our home and betterment, fiscal year 8 was the first year that we received any home repair and betterment dollars that were not available in the previous two bienniums. Previous building maintenance was taken from the operating budget or deferred until alternate funding could be made available. The fiscal year for the biennium 2008-2009 repair and betterment allotment was $3.9 million, or 61.5% of the total allocation for the agency. Those projects include repair of interior building deficiencies due to aging facilities, provided updates for life safety compliance specs and resident care, fund replacement of ongoing wear related to items like floors and ceilings, provide routine mechanical repairs for boilers, air conditioners, and other plant maintenance, building security upgrades, and a code alert system for buildings 16 and 17, 6 and 17.
And again, those are the detailed lists we need shortly from Ms. Keel and you, line item out the costs, what they are. So.
And long-term financial impact of funding is not available. Includes delayed maintenance on facilities and equipment, potential resident safety issues that could lead to Department of Health or Department of Veterans Affairs citations, reduction of operating budgets needed to support resident care. Mr. Chair, that concludes my budget overview of the department.
As you progress on your new building project out there, when's that scheduled to be done?
Mr. Chair, right now the estimate is that we'll receive funding within the next 2 years.
So we're not worried about staffing that up at this point, if there's any changes in staffing, because that will not be reflected in the next biennium yet.
Mr. Chair, that's correct.
Okay. I'm trying to, you have a change item on the spreadsheet that's showing up under your full-time employees of $989,000 a year, 1.8 for the biennium. What's that change item? I'm not finding it in the book either. Governor's change item.
Mr. Chair, I'll let Ms. Kramschroeder answer that question.
Yeah, there we go.
Good morning. My name is Sherry Kramschroeder. I'm the finance officer.
Have a seat, sir.
Sherry Kramschroeder, the finance officer for the Department of Veterans Affairs. Under each of the homes, you'll see a portion under either the 1A or the 1B, and that is their fraction of the maintaining current service levels change item.
Okay. On page 7, our staff says it's showing up. So, I'll look at it. It's difficult to read because, and I'm not saying you're wrong, but you've got a 2009 budget 19.7, and then it goes to 20.3 if the change item is 989. 989 plus 19.7 doesn't equal 20.3, so the numbers aren't just quite meshing there, and I was just trying to figure them out.
Mr. Chair, I'm not seeing the numbers you're referring
we
to.
Have a
each of the homes? Or?
Spreadsheet on the
okay,
back
yeah.
of the Minneapolis home,
mm-hmm.
And when we look at 1AO, full-time employee salaries, our last biennium, 2009, the one we're finishing now, you showed 19.792.
Mm-hmm.
And then into the base, we've got 2383 requested for 2010, which should include, doesn't it, that change item of 989?
Mr. Chair, no, it does not. That
does
includes
not.
The 3.25% standard increase that we were to incorporate into our budget process per the Minnesota Management and Budget.
Okay, all right. Any questions? We'll look at them all. My fiscal guys will look at them, like you're looking at them, and we'll figure it out. Representative Hamilton.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'd like to build off a little bit, I think, where Representative Faust is going as well, and a request from all the veterans' homes. When we're going through these presentations and diving into the budget, for myself personally, it would be nice to have the side-by-side comparisons. We have historical data. We can do side-by-side comparisons on costs when it breaks down on FTEs and then also on non-payroll budgets as well. And when we're just following through on these presentations, it would be very helpful. For instance, when we're going through the FTE breakdown, that we use the same format to describe each home. It would just make it extremely beneficial and helpful on this end, where we have the same categories. And one of the things that I'm looking for and questions that I have on the FTE breakdown, for instance, on the Minneapolis Veterans Home, we have the HFTs, and it talks about 211.87 on FTEs. And then when we go to Hastings, for instance, on HFTs, we have 5.1. Is that in line for the number of beds that we have? Is one more heavily weighted than the other, et cetera, et cetera. I don't have those answers, and I don't know. If we could have it break down on FTE side-by-side comparison, and then the same side on the non-payroll benefits as well, so where we can break that down on costs on a per-bed basis or per patient, probably per-bed basis, and then once again we can do side-by-side comparison, then we can just be asking more in-depth, detailed questions to where we have something to gauge it on. Right now when we're looking at percentages and stuff, I don't know if that's good, if that's bad, where we stand, and just wanted to get that point across where it would be much more beneficial from my perspective.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee will take that into consideration and try to provide those to you.
Anything else for Minneapolis Home right now? And again, we appreciate you coming. Welcome to the Minneapolis Home. We're glad to have an administrator out there, and we know you're going to bring a very positive swing out there is what we're looking for. And we have seen a lot of changes the last year or so since the department's been involved. And it's a work in progress, and we're making some good progress, and we appreciate that. But we're certainly going to work with you and work together to try and overcome any other difficulties we might be experiencing. So thank you for your presentation.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you, and we appreciate your support. And we think a year from now we'll shine.
Cool. All right. I guess Megan Fitzgibbon, a Minnesota GI Bill. We're going to jump around on the schedule a little bit based on the length of their presentations, members. So we're going to hear about the Minnesota GI Bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Megan Fitzgibbon. I work for the Minnesota Office of Higher Education. I manage the Minnesota GI Bill program, contracted by the Department of Veterans Affairs to manage the program.
And I got my staff looking to see what page we're on in the book, unless you know off the top of your
head. The GI Bill is under our benefits and services, and that is page 21 of your budget book.
Under Veterans Affairs, page 21. Uh-oh. How come I go from page 17 to page 29? This isn't good. How do your books look, members? Okay. I got it. Okay. All right.
Okay. I just have a short presentation. I don't have a handout, but just kind of review what happened. Last year was the first year the Minnesota GI Bill was in place, and throughout the year we saw an increase in the number of veterans that were applying and the number of veterans and dependents and spouses that were eligible. And we ended up ending fiscal year 08 with over 1,300 applications and nearly 787 students receiving a little over $1 million in benefits. That was an increase from the estimate. About halfway through the year, we were estimating about 750,000 in benefits being paid out to students, but by the end of the year, which probably was a result of an increase in enrollment for the spring semester and summer, but also increased awareness of the program. And again, we ended the year then with, in addition with the administrative expenses then of a little over $1.1 million or $1,121,599 in expenses to the program.
And what's your name?
Megan.
Fitzgibbon. Ms. Fitzgibbon. Appreciate you being here. We do need to get more detail on this. It's obviously not coming out of the spreadsheet we have, and members, on page 19, there's just one paragraph on it, a general description of it. Again, remind us, the program is a last dollar program, if I remember right. So after students apply for federal, VA, GI Bill benefits, and student loans or grants and Pell Grants and other things. And then we look at the end of the day, if there's some needs not being met, then the Minnesota GI Bill kicks in, I believe, as that last dollar benefit. Last year we saw, thankfully, the federal government come through in a real big way, like they should have. And so we were able to actually turn back or utilize some of those dollars in other program areas. And so what I need now is what you folks are thinking about as an estimate based on last year and based what you're seeing. And I don't have that in front of me right here, right now. So we're going to need those line item details just like we see in the other spreadsheets, but for the GI Bill in particular.
Mr. Chair, definitely I'll be able to give you a summary of last year and so far this year.
And mm-hmm. what your projections are for the next 2 years on that. So, any questions, members? I mean, it's a pretty straightforward program, but we had almost $9-10 million programmed into this thing last planning that we didn't use, which was good because mm-hmm. that meant the feds came through, and we appreciated that. So we're just thinking, trying to figure out what your estimates are for next year as you look at all these programs and, frankly, changes in their stimulus. You're dealing somewhat with the stimulus package, too, because there's changes in Pell Grants and eligibility and other things, although bottom line, it might not be any different.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, for this year, we have definitely seen an increase in the number of students applying and the number of benefits or the amount of benefits they're eligible for. Some of that is about, you know, regarding the increased awareness of the program and also because of the changes that were made last year in the legislature with increasing the annual amount and changing a little bit of the eligibility requirements. But we have definitely seen an increase from the first year to the second year. But you are correct, we are looking at a new post-9/11 federal GI Bill that may make some changes, may make some have an effect on the amount of Minnesota GI Bill that will be handed out to students, although it's still kind of unclear what that will be as the program has not been implemented yet and is still kind of in the phases of determining how it will affect students.
Do we match up pretty closely to the federal eligibility limits in Minnesota? I mean, for example, I understand now that returning Iraqi Afghan vets, having served in combat, when they get back, they're actually eligible now for, I think, up to 3 years after they get back for grad school. Do we match up with eligibility for those types of things? So the federal VA is saying, we're going to take care of some of your grad school costs. Do we also then do a last dollar on those grad students that are coming back? Are we tracking with them on these types of things?
Yes, Mr. Chair. The Minnesota GI Bill is open to both undergraduate and graduate students. What I've seen for last year and also for this year, that there are a number of graduate students that are utilizing the Minnesota GI Bill, partially because they have exhausted their federal Montgomery GI Bill eligibility for their undergraduate work, and so they no longer have that to cover their expenses, and the Minnesota GI Bill steps in to cover a portion of their graduate work as well.
Well, again, as good an estimate as you can get us. We need some more detail on that. I know it's built into the budget here, but I can't see it yet, so it's not pulled out for me. Any questions, members, for the GI Bill? All right, thanks for coming.
Thank you.
Do we have time for anyone else here? Kathy Vitalis, Minnesota Assistance Council for Veterans, MACV. Well, now this is a really big, long overhead. You don't have time to do this,
sir. I wish I can do this, sir. By noon.
Really?
Yes, sir.
Awesome.
I can't say for your questions, but I
good. All right.
I'm Kathleen Vitalis, Executive Director of Minnesota Assistance Council for Veterans, and thank you for allowing me to give this update today. Basically, I had a couple slides in here because there were some students in the room the last time, and I always like to educate. And I've always found it very interesting that the person who talked about the willingness with which our young people are likely to serve in any war, no matter how justified, shall be directly proportional to how they perceive veterans of earlier wars were treated. And that's George Washington. So there is a lot of people looking, of course, all the time at how we are treating all our veterans. MACV, our mission is to provide assistance throughout Minnesota to veterans that are homeless or experiencing a life crisis. We are a 501c3 nonprofit. We were established in 1992. We operate three regional offices for outreach statewide, Mankato, Duluth, and the Twin Cities. We're certified by the Minnesota Charities Review Council. We're audited annually by Larson Allen and throughout the year by other specific funders. So we have lots of audits I've provided you so you could see what one of our audits looks like and the depth and what the questions are that we are asked. And we have about,
by the way, best spreadsheet audit we've had yet from anyone. It was a separate sheet handed out to members, and for the Hamiltons of the world that want detail, this is nice. Thank you.
And total assets a little over $3.5 million, just trying to set the stage. Fiscal year 2009, we have a base appropriation for MACD for $250,000. That started in July of 08, and by October of 08, the money was spent. What we are spending now is our one-time funding of $750,000 that lasts through June. Historically, we've always had a grant through the Department of Veterans Affairs as far back, and I was asked a couple questions about this, so I put this in. For example, in 1998, we were getting $250,000 as a state grant. And in the last legislative session, it was determined we were our own line item. We have grown. And this time through, given the opportunity, we, of course, have our own bill through the House and the Senate so that we can tell our story and show what we do and that why this outreach is necessary. Our results, we were told to come back with, and that's what I'm going to synopsize here in the next 6 minutes, have had huge increases in both effectiveness and efficiencies with the added, especially the one-time funding and our increased outreach. In 2008, over 875 veterans in 62 counties were provided assistance through our intense case management and direct payments. And of course, that put us at the, with the base and the one time, $1 million, which to us, then moving forward with only the base, is a 75% reduction in the services that we've been providing for the last 2 years. I'm also have a finance degree from the University of Minnesota, and it is all about ROI. There is certainly an emotional why we should do what we're doing with this targeted population, but if it doesn't make sense and if the money doesn't add up, you can't do it. So I took two of our outcomes, just two, from two of our different programs. We have a grant in the metro area, 148 in 1 year. Formerly homeless veterans, we employed, intensely case managed, 180 days after employment, we had an 85% retention rate. It represented annual gross wages of formerly homeless people with no wages of $3.5 million. That's one of our programs. Another way to look at it is of the 875 veterans that we assist, and we have the harder to reach, the ones with a lot of complicated issues and circumstances, that we also increase their income, SSDI, or getting them connected to state and federal benefits, $6,300,000, and that's a conservative estimate. So when you look at the money that we're getting to provide that part of the direct case management and direct payments, these are two outcomes that I think speak to an ROI. Our locations, and I'm going to go through this very, very quickly, but I wanted to give you an overview of what we do. The Duluth area, we split the state up this way. The metro area has the counties off to the right, and then, of course, Mankato, they outreach to the southern counties. I'm just going to, again, I have to stress, what we're able to do with our intensive case management is that it's the empowerment. Employment equals housing equals empowerment, and we are a very accountability program. Everyone can hope that their lives get better, but you have to have a strategy, and you have to walk them through what that strategy is going to be. You can't take a homeless person and just get them a job. They are not going to succeed. So it's that intensive case management along the way. We're really going through here now. I talked about our case management, our direct assistance, and what it includes. We also, and I want to point out here, we do not duplicate other services or programs that are out there. In particular, we work with all the county veterans service offices, the Department of Veterans Affairs, and all the applicable programs and benefits that are available. At that point, if something doesn't fit, we fill the gaps, and we move in with our other funds that we have. Eligibility for services is very similar. It's an honorably discharged, 181 days active duty. We've got a variety of programs. Some are homeless. Some are prevention programs. We assess all of these things with the veterans that we see. So you can see the full continuum of, again, they'll come to you and say, I need a job. Well, what's your housing like? And if you don't get the full story, you can't really make them successful in the end. And then we provide this variety of things from eviction prevention, tax and legal referrals, clothing and food vouchers, bus passes, gas cards when applicable. The outcomes are, again, the entire person, from housing to income, financial responsibility, their health. You have to get all of that going to make them successful. I just wanted to move through very briefly. In the metro area, we do provide our own housing throughout the state. We have 8 structured independent living homes. It's transitional housing for homeless veterans. And I wanted to just briefly go through these pictures. These are homes that are in neighborhoods in South Minneapolis, Richfield, one in St. Cloud. And we have 24 beds that we provide for transitional housing for the homeless veterans. I've already talked about our one program in the metro area that is our Department of Labor. It's again showing leveraged funds. We get a lot of federal funding. So we're able to take that Department of Labor grant that got those 148 homeless veterans into employment, but use some of the state funds to maybe get first month rent. And so it all works together to get them stabilized. The Duluth Veterans Place is our newest housing project, and I wanted to point it out. It is, that's the buildings we have acquired. This is what it's going to look like. And the estimated building cost, a little over $2.5 million, and I'm moving very quickly. But the key is total secured to date is $2.1 million. And we are pending approvals on the rest. This project is moving forward. It will provide, in Duluth, 11 units of permanent housing with supportive services and 5 units of transitional housing co-located with our Duluth offices that can be a service center. And again, it's a very good project that we're very proud of, leveraging a ton of different money from federal sources, corporations, foundations. And then I wanted to point out in Mankato, we have 11 units of permanent housing with supportive services, our Radical townhomes. It was land donated by Mr. Radical, who was a veteran. Again, it's a HUD, Minnesota Housing Project. We have 11 veterans, disabled veterans that are living there. And I just got a thank you card from one of them this morning that said, I need to thank you. I promise I won't live in my car anymore. So they are really, you know, it's taking that hard to serve and getting them in housing. We fill the gaps. Some programs have income guidelines that people just don't quite meet. Other programs have restrictions based on disabilities. Other programs, to get the money, you have to be employed. Other programs, you have to be unemployed to get the money. And then when you're waiting for your benefits, sometimes it can take 1 to 4 months when you apply for energy assistance or any of the federal benefits. And in the meantime, while they wait, things get worse. So it's that gap that MACD fills so that we can stabilize them. That law is another program that was through an earmarked federal grant through Senator Wellstone that we have. Our statistics, again, we have 14 full-time FTEs, 12 of which provide direct assistance, over 10,000 contacts a year. Our female veterans that we're assisting are rising. 76% of the veterans we serve have a disability. Our stand-down events are also a wonderful vehicle that we're reaching out into communities to specifically pull providers together to get services to the hardest-to-reach veterans. In a summary, we're statewide, non-duplicated services. We leverage a lot of sources of funding. We work with and partner with the County Veterans Service Officers and the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs, the federal VA, the VA medical centers. Our key is our case management, and we bridge the gap and are that safety net for the ECARD to serve veterans. And then I want to leave a little bit of time. I just put through some instances of just that I took from the last 3 or 4 weeks, the veterans that we were serving. And it's from World War II, as you can see, OIF, OEF, and it's all of these very complicated sets of circumstances. You can also see who we collaborate with. Very always the County Veterans Service Officer, the Family Assistance Centers. It's how do we pull the whole story together for this veteran so that they can be successful. Off of our website, this is what came in last week, and we get this all the time. We're another door in for some of these people that they don't want to go to the VA, and so we're another way in for them to start getting their benefits. But we're a National Guard family. My husband lost his job due to active duty. It's being investigated, but we're about to be evicted. We have triplet girls. We're frantic. Do you help people like us? We're desperate. So again, we're another door in. And I must close with and then answer any questions that you have. We have a bill before the House for the one-time funding to continue it, to add it to the general fund, the $750,000. It has been authored by Representative Morrow in the Senate. It's Sharon Erickson Ropes. And we really look forward to the possibility of having a hearing on that bill so we could provide some more detailed information for you at that time.
In 09, I see a base, you said a base appropriation of $250,000, and then you had one-time money of $750,000. Do you know what's the governor's recommendation this year?
For us,
yeah.
We are not in the,
not in the rec,
we did not, no. We went the other route of putting forward our own bill as the nonprofit.
Okay. Well, I'll have to understand it better. It said you're in the base for $250,000, and
that. Oh, I'm sorry. We're in the base appropriation is there for moving forward. Yes,
they
not the one-time fund.
Recommended $250,000 a year for the next 2 years.
Yes, we're in the base appropriation. Yes, $250,000 a year for the next 2 years. We are in that. It's the one-time funding that was above that is the bill.
All right, that's a moral bill. Yeah. All right. Any questions, members? All right. Thanks for the Irish overview.
You're welcome. Thank you very much.
Any other business for the committee? Seeing none, we're adjourned.